Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AFSCME People, AFSCMEPeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Well, ESPN is in the news again this week. They're doing their media day today when we're taping Wednesday, August 28th. We're taping early enough that nothing has come out of that yet. But we do have some ESPN-related items to note, specifically the restructuring that the company unveiled earlier this week. This is the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, joined as always by Drew Lerner. Please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. So let's jump right into it. ESPN making the decision to basically split its executive teams into one lane that does sports production and another lane that does basically all the studio shows, all the debate shows. This is long overdue. ESPN, for the past few years, has made a dreadful miscalculation about the appeal of its debate shows, thinking that people tune into its live game programming for the same reason they tuned into First Take. But that's not true. People tune into the live game programming for the live game programming. They're not particularly interested in Stephen A. Smith being a Knicks fan or Mike Greenberg being a Jets fan. Now, Greenberg did just get that Sunday NFL Countdown gig. I'm curious which lane was responsible for that decision. But certainly the decision to put Mike McQuaid in charge of production. This is someone who, you know, his record is pretty immaculate as far as what I'm talking about here. He's been on ESPN's tennis coverage, its golf coverage, and most importantly, SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt, probably the best received of all the ESPN shows. And of course, he's a 37-year ESPN veteran as well. I think that's a positive step away from what we saw with Game 7 of the Pacers and Knicks, the low point of ESPN's NBA coverage. I think it's a necessary step away from that. Dave Roberts will no longer be overseeing the NBA. You know, I hope no one misinterprets the things I say and thinks that I have some kind of low opinion of the people who I criticize. I think Dave Roberts, obviously, I'm not a fan of the debate shows, but obviously he knows what he's doing there. But it's a different skill set to oversee debate shows than it is to oversee live game programming because they're not the same thing. And Dave Roberts made a lot of decisions that were that did not work out. I will cut him a break for the firing of Jeff and Mark because he had a plan. His plan was we're going to bring in Doc Rivers. That was not a bad bet because Doc Rivers is such a good TV analyst that you could argue getting rid of Jeff and Mark and bringing in Doc might actually be an improvement. But Doc left. And so Doc leaving blew up the succession plan that Dave Roberts had in store as well, which was Reddick and Jefferson on the B team until it was time for them to ascend. Reddick then moved up to the A team, and then Reddick left. So your entire plan, your A plan and your B plan, get blown up. Add to that some of the aesthetic issues. I think the music that they debuted was a downgrade, a significant downgrade. I think that the pregame show, turning the pregame show into an arm of Get Up and First Take was, you know, I mean, ESPN will say, well, our ratings are up. Well, ratings can be gamed very easily, especially in the finals, where no one but me has noticed, but ESPN is measuring its finals telecast a little bit differently the past few years than previously. Not necessarily in a way that is dishonest, because I think it's actually a better representation of how people are watching the event, but in a way that will make the pregame show numbers look a little bit better than they actually are relative to past years. The pregame show, quality-wise, obviously horrendous. And everybody noticed. Everybody's, you know, the Emperor had no clothes for that Pacers-Knicks Game 7. So, Drew, I'll bring you in on that note.
Yeah, I think you're alluding to, you know, with the ratings measurements, ESPN kind of shifting the windows that they measure, right? Shifting that window closer to the actual tip-off of the game rather than, you know, before the game. You know, I think that's been pretty common practice across the industry. But in any case, you know, when I was reading about this earlier this week, you know, it kind of surprised me that this is not already how ESPN was structured. I mean, I knew intuitively, knowing that, you know, Dave Roberts, he did both, you know, the debate shows and, you know, the NBA studio shows. I knew that, you know, there was crossover there. There was cross-pollination, but to actually see it written out that these are going to be, you know, separate ventures essentially for ESPN now, separate lanes. It was encouraging, right? It's yet to be seen if it'll actually appreciably improve the product when it comes to any in-game studio shows. But it's definitely a step in the right direction. And as you mentioned, Mike McQuaid, his record kind of shows where he stands, right? Sports Center with SVP, as you said, one of the highest praised shows on ESPN. Golf and tennis obviously take a much different tone on ESPN than most of their properties, and they're also very well received. So I'm not going to put the cart before the horse here, John, and say this is a good thing. I mean, in addition to all these changes, it seems like, you know, several executives also lost their jobs. People might be stretched a little bit thinner than they used to, but hey, this is what happens when you're at a high level at a network like ESPN. Changes are made, and let's see if there's actually improvement here.
Yeah, you know, it is encouraging, as you said. You know, again, McQuaid, not just SportsCenter with SVP, but the tennis. You know, I've not always been a big fan of ESPN's tennis coverage, to be completely honest, especially when Serena was still playing. And there was always, you know, there was always some stuff there. But let's be real. You know, that's a well-oiled machine. It's a bit stale because they've had the same people for 100 years. But it's a well-oiled machine. And some of the things that they've done in the past that have been irritating, like, you know, interviewing people during live play, they still do that. But, you know, I think the tennis coverage is as good as ESPN could possibly make it, right? Golf, I mean, obviously the Masters, I don't really know how much ESPN controls that production. I mean, they don't, right? That's all CBS. So what really would he oversee with golf?
You know, PGA? in the morning at the Masters, like, you know, SVP is kind of, you know, that type of thing.
Well, thank you for bringing that up, because the best moment of ESPN all year was Scottie Scheffler's arrest.
That's
excellent. Yeah. They did an amazing job. I was in Indianapolis for Caitlin Clark's first game. You know, you wake up in the morning, you're in a strange hotel room, and you see Scottie Scheffler getting, you know, arrested. It's very surreal. And that was the best thing ESPN did all year. That guy, the person who did that, I want the person who oversaw that to be in charge of how ESPN does game telecasts, not people who are in charge of Mike Greenberg doing shtick and Stephen A doing shtick. I want the person who's doing Scottie Scheffler got arrested, and we are there with cameras and reporters, and we are giving you the best coverage while Golf Channel isn't even on the air. That was impressive. And so to me, look, ESPN, I don't know. ESPN doesn't have to be irritating. It doesn't have to be. It's ESPN. You know, I mean, like, they can do good work. Oftentimes they choose not to, right? I think this is a rare case where they have chosen to try to improve their game telecasts. And maybe Adam Silver said something in the course of negotiations. Maybe Adam Silver said something along the lines of, please treat our product better. And again, that's not a dig at Dave Roberts so much as saying Dave Roberts has a skill set that did not apply to the NBA.
Yeah, I think you're definitely onto something by bringing up the NBA in general here. I think the studio production and the game production, for that matter, there's just blunder after blunder last year. And obviously the buck stops with David Roberts when he's overseeing all of that at ESPN. From the announcing teams to the studio, it was kind of just an embarrassment all the way through. I won't go as far to say that maybe Adam Silver had something to do with this. I think this is probably in the works before that, but I'm sure Burke Magnus, who oversees all of this, you know, he's well aware of the criticisms that the NBA coverage got last season. And I don't think that's something he's going to let stand going into one more season of the old deal and then an entirely new 11-year deal with the league. He probably realizes that changes have to be made. And I'm sure Adam Silver's not angry about it.
Yeah, I mean, well, one, I would say, and I know people have a certain opinion of Ethan Strauss, whatever. Ethan Strauss has said, alluded to on multiple occasions, Adam Silver not being a fan of ESPN's NBA coverage, and it wouldn't surprise me. I know David Stern definitely wouldn't be. But I would say, and I don't think he was when he was alive and still the commissioner. I would say that it's interesting because usually I'm the only person criticizing ESPN's NBA coverage. And this year, everybody was. And obviously, there's a little bit of competitive pride in Bristol, surely. Look, when you win exclusive rights, you can do whatever you want. EA Sports hasn't made a good Madden game in literally 20 years because they have exclusive rights. They no longer have 2K Sports challenging them anymore, so they can be as lazy as they want, put out a game that's subpar and has been subpar for, you know, since the Bush administration, right? That's what exclusive rights grant you. And ESPN has exclusive rights to the NBA Finals. They don't have to improve. But there is competitive pride in this industry. And, you know, what they've been putting out the last 3 years on the NBA, you're not going to get a sports Emmy for that. You're going to get a sports Razzie, right? They don't have the sports Razzies yet, but, you know, that's the equivalent of what they would be getting. So there's no reason why ESPN's NBA coverage should be like this. No reason at all. Now, you're in a bit of a hole here because, like I said, Dave Roberts' main plan and backup plan both got blown up, which is not really his fault, but certainly it was a risk that didn't work out. So now you do not have a lead team. You have Breen, you have Doris Burke. That's it. Me personally, I'll be completely real. I've been a fan of Doris Burke since I was listening to her do games in the WNBA with Michelle Tafoya on play-by-play. But I don't feel like he's, you know, the best fit for the lead team right now. Maybe a few years ago, but ever since Drake wore that shirt with Doris Burke's face on it, I feel like her performance has not been the same. It's like one of those things, she became too self-aware, and maybe the executives kind of got to her as well. She's not the same analyst that she was when her profile was lower. So it's kind of a bit of a converse situation where she would have been better for the lead team before people really knew about her. Now, the fame that she has, I feel like it's gotten into her performance and it's not the same. I don't think she was bad last year, but I do think you can improve in that role. I think they should probably go clean sweep, Breen and an entirely new analyst or two analysts. I don't think you can go internal here. If Jamal Crawford is available, I don't know that he has the strength to be a lead analyst on like the Finals yet, but he's certainly improving. Dwayne Wade, who was a bit on the Olympics, I'd try to get Dwayne Wade. I'd say Breen and Wade. Right. And maybe just do a lot of poaching of Turner, because, I mean, obviously, maybe not for this year. just get as many of those folks as you can. Anybody at Turner who's on an expiring deal, and obviously Crawford, but anybody else, like if Candace Parker's available, you know, I mean, get Turner people.
Yeah. Well, we've definitely seen ESPN's willingness to go and, you know, poach talent for their biggest properties with Joe Buck and Troy Aikman.
Jason McCourty even.
Yeah, Jason McCourty recently, exactly. So it's not something ESPN is shying away from anymore. I think maybe in the past they were, you know, biased towards homegrowing their talent. I can't really remember any other high-profile talent acquisitions from other networks that ESPN has done. I'm sure somebody out there can think of some, but I can't right now. But, you know, for a property as important as the NBA, this is what you do. You have to do anything you can to, you know, to have the best booth possible, right? And I'm not going to, you know, I don't think David Roberts is blameless here, right?
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah. You know, he absolutely turned the status quo at ESPN upside down. You know, 20 years almost of an amazing A team with Van Gundy and Mark Jackson. And you took a huge gamble on bringing in Doc Rivers. I don't think it's just a small gamble. This was a large gamble. This is somebody that's been coaching for pretty much the entire time Van Gundy and Jackson were a team together. And you're pretty much, you know, putting all of your eggs in that basket that he's not going to go into coaching again. Clearly, that was a huge misread from Roberts' part. I don't know what Doc Rivers said in any interviews with him, but clearly he still had a desire to be on the sidelines. And so that was just an incredibly bad misread by ESPN there. You know, because Rivers would have been good. He would have been a suitable replacement. But then you're left, you know, with your pants down when he leaves. So I don't know. It seems to me like, why would you mess up a good thing? Why would you fix something that's not broken? That's what happened last season. It was, you know, not total disaster, but it was pretty bad. So I think now is the time. Like you said, maybe you search outside of the network. You're going to have plenty of talent from Turner that could come right over and really bolster that lineup. So,
yeah, and bring back the old theme music.
Yeah, I agree. The new theme music is very low energy.
Yeah. This, I mean, you know, you're right. Dave Roberts is not blameless. I think he got promoted. Very important to note. He got promoted. But he got promoted and also taken off of something that he was not doing well at all, right? So, you know, it's not one of those Pam Oliver promotions where it's like, we've promoted Pam Oliver to not working for us in 2 years. Remember that? Remember when Fox put that out? It's not one of those because he literally was promoted. But there's something else in here, which is obviously we can't continue to have him doing the NBA. And when it comes down to it, there was a lot of fixing of things that weren't broken. You know what was broken? The stupid, and I don't use the word stupid very often, the stupid decision to give the pregame show to both Rachel Nichols and Maria Taylor. This decision made 5 years ago has been something that ESPN's NBA coverage is still trying to recover from. That was the original sin. The Rachel Nichols, Maria Taylor situation. And Dave Roberts came in the wake of that and made a lot of changes that didn't need to be made. And none of the changes were good. The only change that Dave Roberts made that I think holds up is the graphics, the overarching graphics package. I think that looks nice. They should keep that. Everything else, and it's too late to change it for this season. The whole look, the music, the graphics, and while they have to change this for this season, the announcing, they got to do something on that front. D Wade is the most sensible, in my view, pick. And obviously, he's got improving to do, but he can do that over the course of a season, hopefully. But that's the way that I see it.
Oh, that's a positive note to end on, the graphics package.
Yeah.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, John, let's move on to our next order of business here. We're going to do a little bit of a legal roundup. A lot of court cases going on in the world of sports media, sports business, a ton to sort through here. So I'll give you the option. Do you want to start venue? Do you want to start with Amazon Bally Sports? Do you want to start with Sunday Ticket? I think there's things that we can discuss with all of this.
Well, let's start with the Paramount situation. You might have read on SMW this week a guest post by Jesse Karangu about Paramount and that whole deal. That's been just ridiculous all year long. The saga, will Paramount go here or there? Well, the challenger to Skydance, Edgar Bronfman Jr., has bowed out. So I guess here's your answer. It'll be Skydance. Paramount is easy to overlook. Obviously they're not doing too well. I don't know what the future is there. Why would you join back up with Viacom? You split apart. What does Viacom have that gives you strength? What, a content library? Oh, whoop-de-doo. You know, I mean, couldn't you have licensed that without bringing in all of these cable channels that are destined for the dustbin? You realize that Comedy Central only has a future because Jon Stewart couldn't do anything on Apple? That's the only reason why Comedy Central has a future. Why would you pick up Comedy Central?
We don't even know if it has a future after the election. Yeah. I don't think Stewart's committed to anything after that. Let's take a step back and just quickly explain for our listeners what happened here. So a few months ago, or a month and a half ago or so, CBS and Skydance, well, Paramount and Skydance agreed to a deal that would see Skydance and David Ellison purchase Paramount for an obscene amount of money. I forget exactly the figure. That deal included a go shop period, which I believe was about 45 days or so, where Paramount could hear other offers. That is where Edgar Bronfman Jr. came in. He's also the CEO of Fubo, or chairman of Fubo, I believe. I don't think this offer from Bronfman was actually seen as serious within the industry. This is not something I follow super closely, but you know, there's a lot of reasons that Sherry Redstone went with the Skydance deal after all, and it seems like Skydance really overpaid. That's to be seen in the future here, but based on what the original price was and what Skydance actually ended up paying, it seemed very unlikely that there is going to be any other buyer that was serious. So the bid was submitted, and then the Paramount Special Committee announced that the go shop process was over. They will not entertain Bronfman's bid. So at the end of the day, everything with the Skydance deal seems, to be full go. What happens next is interesting. I do think you're underestimating the value of a content library like Paramount's. Obviously, the legacy cable channels, those are dying businesses. I think everyone can acknowledge that. But there's a whole movie studio that Paramount has, and those get great residuals. And if you make a hit, and if you have the IP for those, there is value there. The question is, is it valued, correctly by David Ellison and Skydance?
Yeah. Well, you make an excellent point. I don't see what they've got really going for them. I mean, they're not quite like WBD, but not that far off from being WBD, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously value in having a broadcast network like CBS. But let's be real. Someone like David Ellison, who has gobs of money, that's all it really takes to drive the price, right? Like, it's almost a vanity project for someone of that nature. If he has the money and wants to buy Paramount Global for, billions and billions of dollars so he can, run a movie studio and run a broadcast network and, have the NFL under his umbrella. I mean, to someone like him, that might be worth it. It might not be a shrewd business decision. That's where I kind of fall on this, John.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And we'll see how that goes. I mean, realistically, what is the future of any of these platforms other than Disney, Comcast, Amazon, Google, the giants, right? I don't think it's too bright.
All right, let's move on to Amazon's withdrawal of funds from Diamond Sports.
Yeah.
This broke a couple days ago. Tom Friend in Sports Business Journal. Amazon's deal from January, where they were going to pay Diamond Sports Group over $100 million as part of their effort to emerge from bankruptcy. Amazon has withdrawn that funding. And now Diamond is in a shakier position than it was, last week, right? According to the report, they are still on track to have the funding necessary to be solvent. But, of course, having the backing of a, juggernaut like Amazon would certainly help in terms of that effort. So, John, what do you think of Amazon's decision to pull out?
Well, I mean, the better question is, what do I think about this Diamond saga? I mean, they keep saying, we've got this, we've got that, and then they don't. We have a deal with the NBA and hockey. Oh, no, we don't have that deal. We have this new Amazon deal. And, well, you don't have that anymore. I'm so sick and tired of hearing about this company and its various machinations and bankruptcy. Thanks a lot. The one time the federal government actually did anything in regards to antitrust, we ended up going from having these RSNs owned by Disney, which would have been a whole different scenario, to this. I mean, this is madness. Look, and it's disrupted the entire industry. It's disrupted everybody's best laid plans. So, look, I don't know. The reporting is, actually, Diamond will be fine. They don't need Amazon. We were told that Amazon was going to save Diamond, but now they don't need Amazon. Whatever. Look, I just think the new deal that Diamond reached with the NBA and hockey last week, that look at the end part of that deal, because that deal basically is we'll keep these relationships going if we have a plan to continue as a going concern. I don't think they've got a plan. I think they keep throwing things at the wall to see if it'll stick. And so the thing about that deal is, if they don't have a plan, the NBA and hockey can get out of this arrangement, which, yes, is financially beneficial, right? Obviously, it's still cable television. There's still more money in that than, whatever streaming options there are. But the NBA and hockey can get out of this relationship, which again, yeah, there's a financial hit, but man, to actually not have to deal with this drama and uncertainty, I think would be a huge win for a big win for everyone involved.
Yeah, I've never really imagined an alternate reality where Disney was allowed to keep the RSNs. Yeah. That seems like it could have been a lot better for the consumers.
It would have been bad for Disney, but Disney's competent. They wouldn't have gone bankrupt. And obviously there'd be a lot of regret. There'd be a lot of irritation that they spent as much money as they did on properties that have no value, right? Not no value, but certainly not the 20-something billion that was quoted. But they would be, you'd be able to watch all these things on ESPN Plus. Mm-hmm. Come on. And it would have been easier to include them in the negotiations for both the NBA and hockey. Because remember, this goes back to 2018. I've always thought, and I still do, that the Trump-era Justice Department didn't want ESPN to get those RSNs because Trump was mad at Jemele Hill. And I know that's a conspiratorial thought, and that realistically you can make an argument for antitrust, blah, blah, blah. But how often do you see antitrust scrutiny? We're starting to see it again now, but like for years from the 1996 Telecommunications Act, there's been nothing. It's like, do what you want to do. We're out of your business. We're out of your hair. Then all of a sudden it's like, well, these RSNs can't go to ESPN. I know it's a conspiratorial thought, but I've always thought that that had to do with Trump being upset with Jemele Hill.
Very interesting. Let's move on to venue. The purveyors of venue sports, that would be Fox, Warner Brothers Discovery, and Disney, have filed an appeal, and they want to do it hastily. They want to speed up this process. Obviously, they are not happy with the preliminary injunction given by the federal judge in their case. So they're set for trial later in September, I think mid-September sometime. So does this mean anything? Do you think Venue Sports is trying earnestly to get this injunction lifted? Or is this just kind of the obvious next step? They have to do it just to keep up, images.
The latter. Obvious next step. That's all you can do. I don't think anyone's going to be broken up if it doesn't happen. To me, it is what it is. It was kind of a strange announcement when it was made. I think, to me, if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. I mean, ESPN is much more interested in its own direct-to-subscriber service, and frankly, probably better for them to have to, to go to market with their own service rather than their service and also Venue, because why would I get ESPN's service when I could get Venue? Fox, I don't think Fox has ever cared that much about streaming. I mean, obviously they were involved and invested in this, but.
I think for that reason, this kind of hurts Fox the most, right? They had the most to gain from Venue, at least, being bundled with ESPN and Warner Brothers Discovery in this. It would have, pretty much prevented them from having to invest any sort of upfront cost in their own independent streaming service. And I think they would have came out a big winner had Venue been able to launch and, became popular. But now I think it's back to the drawing board for Fox in terms of their digital strategy. They kind of had all their eggs in the Venue basket.
Fox's digital strategy is that they put nearly all of their sports on their broadcast network, right? So you don't really, FS1 does have a few things here and there, but, Fox has done, to their credit, in my opinion, as someone who is a proponent of broadcast TV, they put more of their events on broadcast TV than most of the other platforms do. I mean,
but if you're not getting your broadcast channels through an antenna, you need to have a pay TV subscription to access anything Fox is doing. So it's very interesting, comparing them to Paramount Plus and Peacock, who will offer those properties on their streaming service. All right, John, a couple more very quick legal roundups. In the NFL Sunday Ticket trial, the plaintiffs have filed an appeal, as was expected. Of course, I don't think we should expect too much from that case. NFL seems to be on pretty strong footing there. And then, of course, we have the granddaddy of them all, the NBA and Warner Brothers Discovery. Of course, the NBA earlier this week filed a motion to dismiss the Warner Brothers Discovery lawsuit, claiming that they can match the Amazon deal on a couple different grounds. Primarily that Warner Brothers Discovery could not match the streaming-only nature of the Amazon deal by wanting to air their games on their linear cable channels. Additionally to that, it got into how Amazon is actually paying their rights fees by putting 3 years of rights fees up front to the NBA in an escrow, while Warner Brothers Discovery is trying to match that through lines of credit. Not exactly apples to apples there. So the NBA filed a pretty strongly worded motion to dismiss earlier this week. What do you take away from that?
Well, I mean, I think obviously the NBA's position has always been that WBD is not doing a sufficient match. So you have two parties that are both kind of doing a little bit of, I wouldn't say chicanery, but, you know, certainly they know what they're doing. The NBA wanted an offer that WBD could not possibly match and set something up that was onerous. WBD is saying that they're matching by stretching the limits of that term. So it just depends on, you know, what stretching of the truth is going to resonate the most with the judge. And I think the NBA's will, because you are allowed to structure a deal when you have matching rights involved in such a fashion that will be difficult for the other side to match. Now you say, well, aren't you negotiating in good faith? Well, I don't see why this wouldn't constitute good faith. And the NBA was very, you know, the one thing that I say that I will say the NBA has in their back pocket. From the beginning, the NBA was explicit about its desire to have a streaming only deal. They were explicit about it.
You got to think it would be the easiest argument in the world to convince a judge that cable is dying, streaming is becoming more and more popular every single year. We always wanted a streaming only deal. This is not that. Case closed. Like, that's got to be a very straightforward argument for the NBA.
And the argument that the NBA makes, which is, well, why didn't you match NBC, is a great argument, because NBC's deal is the WBD deal. It is. And the WBD contract, the NBC deal has much more in common with what WBD currently owns. What does Amazon have? The only thing that Amazon has contractually that WBD negotiated in that 2014 deal is Thursday night games. That's it. That's it. Thursday night games. Because the in-season tournament and NBA Cup, obviously there was some kind of deal, I'm sure, struck with ESPN and WBD for those rights. I mean, I'm not really even sure, though, how that worked out. But those did not exist when the previous deal was signed. And those are the primary things that Amazon will get.
Yeah. The NBA is essentially saying, Warner Brothers Discovery wants to have their cake and eat it too, right? They want to match the lower price of the Amazon deal, but they have none of the, you know, the streaming infrastructure or you know, the funding that Amazon has. And as you said, the actual properties, the actual inventory that WBD has, that is 90% of that is in the NBC deal. So, very strong argument from the NBA. We'll see where this goes from here. John, why don't you close us out?
Well, another week down, and of course, we are heading into football season. The first full weekend of college football is this weekend, and then the National Football League follows. So, the dead period of summer is almost over, with apologies to the Olympic Games, which doesn't even feel like that ever happened, does it? We are now heading into the meat of the sports calendar, and we'll be back here to chronicle all of it on the SMW podcast.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.